All right, welcome to Brighton Broadcast News, Monday, November 6, 2023. Thank you for joining me, Mike Adams here. The working title for today's show, although this could change, is that war in the Middle East is a Luciferian plot to destroy Christianity, Islam, and Judaism. I mean, today we're going to look at the big, big picture. How is Lucifer, i.e. Satan, using this, or how has this been engineered in order to destroy all faith, or to get one faith to destroy another? You see, you know how this works on earth. I mean, not even in the spiritual realm, just in the political realm, right? It's divide and conquer. It's the globalist pitting blacks against whites. Or it's maybe, you know, pitting Islam against Christians, or pitting men against women, which is part of the transgender movement. But at an even bigger level of this, the spiritual level, there is a plot to pit the major world religions against each other, have them destroy each other, and cause humanity to lose all faith in all renditions of God, whatever they may be in specific, religions or practices, and then to get people to turn to Lucifer as their savior. I mean, this is the big, big picture. We're going to get into that today, and it involves a shocking piece of history with a letter written by a man named Albert Pike. We'll get to that in just a minute. I want to thank also Brad Cummings. He's the publisher of the Patriots Bible, and he has been helping me try to understand scripture a lot more and try to decode some of what is written and some of what it might mean. We'll get to some of that as well. You know, you can spend a lifetime studying the Bible and still not know what it means. I mean, there are lots of people who spend lifetime studying it and they will argue with each other. So, it's a tough one. But let's start out with something, which is I want to restate my purpose in bringing you this Brighton Broadcast News each day. My purpose is to help you navigate what's happening. First, to understand it, which is part of then being able to navigate it. And by navigate it, I mean I want to help you survive it, which means you need to be able to prepare for it, which means we need to be able to have a sense of what's coming. And so my job here is to bring you information that you're not going to see in mainstream media, but then to also connect the dots in a way that you normally don't see in conventional media either. My goal is for all of humanity to achieve peace, prosperity, joy, and to be able to live in peace with one another, and to have, you know, freedom and liberty, and freedom from government totalitarianism, freedom to speak, all these things, freedom to grow your own food. This is what I believe in. This is what drives me. And I want to reiterate my position in three ways. Number one, as an American. Number two, as a Christian. And number three, as a humanitarian. Because I know that my broadcasts can often seem like they're filled with criticism. And they are. I'm very critical of the current so-called leaders of America. Why? Because as an American, I love my country. I love what America was founded on and what it stands for. And I want to defend it. I am trying to defend America. I'm trying to restore America. If I didn't care about America, I wouldn't criticize it. It's like, hey, you know, the government of Nigeria is probably corrupt. I don't criticize Nigeria because I'm not Nigerian, and that's just not on my radar. I'm an American. I care about America. And so, yeah, I'm going to call out rigged elections. I'm going to call out, you know, broken leadership and racist, intolerant leaders like we have in the State Department, incompetent leaders and so on. So, yeah, there's going to be heavy criticism, but I want you to understand that comes from a place of actually being a patriot, loving my country, loving the promise of America, and hoping to restore that. Secondly, as a Christian, I will often criticize Christians, and I will criticize pastors and churches, and lately I will absolutely criticize Christian Zionists, which is a whole different podcast. But understand, same thing as me being an American, I criticize what I think is wrong in Christianity because I love being a Christian and I love my relationship with Jesus Christ and with God. And I experience the Creator in my day-to-day life, especially in walks in nature and even working in my science lab, which is kind of unraveling the great cosmic rules of the universe that God engineered and so on. I see God everywhere. I see God's hand in everything around us, in nutrition, in healing medicine, in photosynthesis, in the way water flows. I mean, I see God everywhere. And thus, even for me to say, oh, I believe in God, that it's almost irrelevant. I experience God every single day, everywhere I look. I experience God directly. I don't have to believe in it. I don't have to have faith in it. I'm seeing it. So I love being a Christian, but I see so many wrong things in Christianity, like churches, you know, dumbing people down or refusing to teach the book of Revelation or refusing to be honest with people about what God wants us to do with our lives. I see churches pushing vaccines, for example, like transhumanism jabs, and then they're doing it in the name of God. Are you kidding me? Of course I'm going to call that out because that's insane. So just like I'm an American and I've got some strong words for those who are destroying America, I'm a Christian and I have strong words for those who I see as destroying or harming Christianity or teaching principles that stand in contradiction to Christianity. And I don't claim to be perfect. I don't claim to have perfect knowledge or a perfect interpretation, but I have principles and I am consistent in applying those principles. In fact, before I get to the third point here, I do want to mention, I've come to realize that in my own personal discernment of watching how people react to this situation in the Middle East, Israel versus Palestine, it's not, in my mind, if I'm going to judge people, and yes, I'll use that word. If I judge people, I'm actually not judging them based on which side they're on. It's not about, oh, are you with Israel or are you with Palestine? I'm actually exercising discernment on people based on whether they cite consistent principles in making their decision on who they side with. That's the issue. I mean, for example, I've seen, you know, LGBT groups marching for Palestine, apparently having no knowledge that if they took their children into Palestine and started promoting transgenderism mutilation, the Palestinian Muslims would probably behead the parents. You know what I mean? It's like, how can you push transgenderism of children and think that you are with the Muslims in Palestine? They would murder you, probably. And it makes me realize that there are a lot of people supporting Palestine who really have no underlying consistent principle that's driving their support. They're just doing so out of a reaction against maybe Netanyahu, who is a very far right figure in Israel, or maybe as a reaction against organized religion, or maybe as a reaction, they're doing it as a reaction against Jews or Judaism or Zionism or what have you. I have no respect for people who side with Palestine but don't have a principle that they can elucidate that is consistent. And at the same time, I have no respect for people who side with Israel and also cannot elucidate core principles of why. Why have you chosen to side with Israel? What's driving you? What are your principles? And please don't tell me that God told you you were the chosen ones and you have the right to kill everybody else, because I don't accept that either. So core principles are what matter. And our principles don't necessarily have to agree with each other. But if we are to coexist in a civilized society, we have to be consistent in the way we apply those principles. Which brings me to my point number three, reiterating my position. And the third one is as a humanitarian. So I am pro-human. And you know this if you've heard my podcast for very long. I've often said I'm on team humanity. So I help educate and protect people from transhumanism technologies like mRNA, bioweapons injections. And I also speak out against those who are slaughtering innocent human beings, innocent civilians, especially women and children and so on. And that's exactly what's happening in Gaza right now. And that is why I am very, very critical of Israel's actions and the IDF and the bombings of the residential buildings. And by the way, there was another university that was bombed. We'll get to that in a minute. But it's not based on a knee-jerk reaction against Israel or in favor of Palestine. It's the principle that it's always wrong to murder women and children or to bomb innocent civilians. And I know that some people on the Israel side will say, well, they're not innocent. They supported Hamas. Oh, give me a break. Israel bombed a hospital full of cancer patients. You can't tell me that cancer patients are, you know, supporting Hamas. What are you going to do? Here, tumors for the cause. I mean, come on. It's not, you can't tell me. I mean, almost half the casualties in Gaza are children, you know, under 18 years old. You can't tell me that these children are all terrorists. I mean, give me a break. This idea of collective punishment, it doesn't fly. And I would say the same exact thing. I would have the same answer if, I mean, take your choice. If America were bombing Mexicans, because, you know, there people like Lindsey Graham have said, I'm pretty sure he said this, that we should deploy the military to go after the drug cartels and just start bombing Mexico. I'm like, what, are you crazy? Because you'd be killing innocent civilians, you know? And that's wrong. No matter who you're talking about bombing, if you're bombing women and children and indiscriminate bombing, you're bombing hospitals, you're bombing residential buildings, it's always wrong. Because again, I am a humanitarian. And as a humanitarian, I defend humanity. I defend life. That's why I'm also opposed to abortion. By the way, it is a very consistent position with being opposed to the indiscriminate bombing of Gaza. I oppose the transhumanism vaccine injections. I oppose euthanasia. And I've come to find that I actually oppose the death penalty. And that's not something that it's a position that I've elucidated. And I actually, previously, years ago, I think I supported the death penalty, although I didn't really focus on it. But now I realize that the state is so corrupt that trusting the state to determine who is so guilty that they should be put to death, trusting that state is insane, because the whole system of so-called justice is completely corrupt. And also, as someone who runs a mass spec laboratory, and I've become aware of some of the shenanigans in the industry, including among crime labs and police labs, and I've come to know that FBI, the labs that the FBI uses and the labs that police departments use, they are so filled with total fraud, including PCR genetic fraud, not to mention drug testing fraud, and used to be hair analysis fraud, and so many other things, that I can't trust state's evidence that's based on laboratory testing, because I know that much of that is absolutely faked. And so when the state wants to put somebody to death, all they have to do is fabricate the evidence. So that's why I now oppose the death penalty, because of all the corruption. I'm not saying that there aren't people who don't deserve the death penalty. Clearly there are. Clearly there are, you know, murderers, people who have tortured other people who have kidnapped and raped and murdered. Clearly they are deserving of death, but we cannot trust our current corrupt system of law enforcement and law enforcement investigations and the corrupt court system to make an accurate decision or to even have accurate evidence. And thus, our system is killing innocent people by putting them to death. And as you know, one of my foundational beliefs is that it's wrong to kill innocent people. So there you go. Now, see, when I was a child, I always recited the Pledge of Allegiance in school. We all did. And of course, as a child, I was naive enough to believe that they meant it, that whoever wrote the Pledge of Allegiance, whoever was enforcing the Pledge of Allegiance, you know, the adults in society, they meant it, even though we didn't even know the words. We were like, one nation under God, invisible, with freedom and justice for all. I mean, we didn't even get half the words right. It was like, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the public four witches stands, like, you know, kids don't even know what they're saying. Only later can you go back and parse the words and say, whoa, wait a second, that was pretty profound stuff that we were just mindlessly repeating. And then you come to find that nobody means it. Like, one nation under God, indivisible, right? It means we're all together. It means also we cannot be divided by race or social standing or financial status, right? We cannot be divided by religion or skin color. One nation under God, indivisible, with freedom and justice for all. Ask Donald Trump if he's being served freedom and justice for all, because he's not. He's being selectively targeted. Ask Owen Schroyer, who's currently in jail in D.C., and they put him in solitary confinement, too. There is not freedom and justice for all. And, of course, we are no longer a nation under God. We are a nation that has been infiltrated by satanic influences. And that's going to bring me to, you know, back to the main topic here today, that war in the Middle East is a Luciferian plot. And it's designed to destroy all faith on our planet and to pit the world religions against each other and get them to destroy each other in order to destroy humanity's faith in what the Bible says, or what the Quran says, or what the Talmud says, or any of the religious texts, to get people to say that, wow, based on what's happening in the world, God can't be real. Therefore, they would be more susceptible to turn to the Antichrist, which is, you know, a generic label. It could mean lots of things. The Antichrist could be a person. It could also be an AI system pretending to be a person, by the way. Have you thought about that? One world government AI that is said to possess supernatural powers of omniscience and omnipotence, right? Global AI that tells you how to live your life, that decides all court cases, that decides what speech you're allowed. It's the Antichrist, or it could be the Antichrist. And then people will worship it after they have been disillusioned by Christianity and Judaism and Islam, after having seen the failure of those religions and the total destruction through World War III that is underway right now. We're going to get to that. This is the big, big picture of what is actually happening. We'll get to that in a second. I want to remind you that tomorrow I'm hosting the Alex Jones Show, the second and third hour. So that's 12 noon Central for 2 hours. And I have two guests. First hour, I have Jeffrey Prather. And the second hour, I have Scott Ritter, a former UN weapons inspector. And those 2 hours are going to fly by, let me tell you. Plus, I've got some hard-hitting interviews that I've already completed with Ann Vandersteel and another one with Michael Young. And I've also got some microscopy video work that I've done in the studio that I would like to show you, which is pretty mind-blowing. And a lot more coming up. So this is going to be an interesting week. Be sure to stay tuned. I want to read for you part of a message that I tweeted out. I think I tweeted this on Friday, that I felt so ashamed as an American, even though, again, as I just explained, I love America. I love the concept of America. I want to restore America. I want to defend America against those who are destroying it. But I am ashamed of the actions of those who are currently in charge of the American government or the United States government. I'm ashamed of them. And in the interest of peace, I want Palestinian people all over the world to know that as an American, I do not condone what my government is doing and how my government is complicit in Israel's bombing of civilians in Gaza. And this is all in the interest of peace. I think it's really critical for Palestinian people everywhere or Muslims everywhere to understand that, like all wars, this is not a war of people versus people. This is a war of governments versus people. This is a government waging this war outside of our control, the governments of Israel and the United States. So here's my message. It says, a message to all Palestinians. As an American, I am ashamed of what my government is doing to your people. The Biden administration and its war-hungry State Department officials have green-lighted genocide carried out by Israel against your families, elderly, women, and children. U.S. weapons are used by the IDF on U.S.-made fighter jets to drop bombs on refugee camps, hospitals, mosques, and residential buildings. These are atrocities, war crimes, knowingly committed in violation of international humanitarian law and the Geneva Convention. If the world were truly just, then Netanyahu, Blinken, Nuland, Biden, and other top officials would be indicted by the International Criminal Court, the ICC, for crimes against humanity, and both the United States and Israel would be stripped of UN recognition and declared terror states, for that is what they have both become. I pray for peace, humanitarian assistance, and a true accounting for those who are complicit in these atrocious crimes against humanity, and we shall not be intimidated into silence by Zionists whose entire philosophical foundation is based on racial supremacy and genocidal violence against others. May God protect the innocent and reveal the guilty for all the world to see. Please translate and share this message in the interests of peace, and know that many Americans, including many Christians, are absolutely appalled at what is taking place in Gaza. So that's what I sent out there. I'm sure it may have ruffled a few feathers. Doesn't matter. More of us have to get out messages like this to say, you know, our governments have gone mad. Our governments have abandoned humanitarian principles. But it doesn't mean that we, the people, support what they are doing. We, the people, like people everywhere, mostly just want to live in peace. But, of course, when I said, what am I saying there, that Zionists, their philosophical foundation is based on racial supremacy, it is. They believe they are chosen by God and that they stand above all other human beings, that all others, including, by the way, American Christians, are less than the Zionists. They think they are the supreme race. And when I say they want to carry out genocidal violence against others, that is admitted by them. And here's another example from the Israeli government. You know how we've seen Netanyahu saying all these crazy things? Well, check this out. Over the weekend, Israeli Heritage Minister Amichai Eliyahu suggested that Israel could launch a nuclear strike on Gaza. He says it's a possibility, that it's one of the possibilities to nuke Gaza. Now, this happened during an interview with Radio Kol Barama. This guy's a member of the Otzma Yehudit Party. He was asked if Israel could drop an atomic bomb on Gaza, and he replied, well, this is one of the possibilities. And he said there should be no humanitarian aid because, he says, quote, we wouldn't hand the Nazis humanitarian aid. And he also says there's no such thing as uninvolved civilians in Gaza. So he's saying that pregnant women are terrorists too. Cancer patients are terrorists too. University professors are all terrorists in Gaza, he says. And so are the five-year-olds, by the way, the children. They're all terrorists, he says. And he thinks that perhaps they should just drop a nuke on Gaza. So obviously, a nuclear weapon would be an indiscriminate mass bombing, a weapon of mass destruction, a complete violation of the rules of war, Geneva Convention, international humanitarian law, and so on. And by the way, the total power of the bombs that the IDF has so far dropped on Gaza have already exceeded the atomic bomb that the U.S. dropped on Hiroshima. I don't know if you knew that. But that was, I think, 16 kilotons, Hiroshima. What Israel has dropped on Gaza is more than 16 kilotons at this point and rising by the day. We are rapidly approaching 10,000 civilian casualties in Gaza. But again, this guy, the Israeli Heritage Minister, says there are no civilians. He says they're all combatants. Well, how convenient. If you want to carry out genocide, you just declare the entire race of Palestinians to be enemy combatants. That's essentially what he has done. And I think that Gallant, you know, the head of the defense minister of Israel, I think he agrees with that. And many, many Zionists agree with this. We've heard many of them. I've quoted many of them over the last couple of weeks. Well, these remarks about nuking Gaza were, of course, quite controversial. It resulted in a lot of outrage over the weekend. And to his credit, Benjamin Netanyahu suspended Eliyahu. Suspended him. Like, you went too far, dude, to say, you know, nuking Gaza. Apparently that's that crosses a red line. But then Netanyahu's office said they had to suspend Eliyahu because the IDF is, quote, operating in accordance with the highest standards of international law to avoid harming innocents, which is, of course, sheer delusion, because they're bombing ambulances, they're bombing people standing in bread lines, they're bombing hospitals and universities and refugee camps and residential buildings. They're not avoiding harming innocents. They are harming innocents. It's just that, you know, this guy, what's his name again? Eliyahu, he's very open about it. It's like, yeah, we just want to commit genocide and murder all Palestinians, whereas Netanyahu is pretending like they're not. That's the only difference between these two. Actually, Netanyahu probably agrees with this guy. He probably agrees, yeah, let's nuke it, except it would make it hard for Israel to colonize Gaza and take it over if there's too much, you know, nuclear fallout. That's probably the only reason why they're not nuking it. Now, in my assessment, the reason Netanyahu doesn't want anybody within the Israeli government to talk about nuking Gaza is not because he doesn't really want to nuke Gaza. It's because he doesn't want to give other countries a warning that Israel may be about to use nukes on other countries. See, I don't think Israel would nuke Gaza because Israel wants to control Gaza, but would Israel nuke Iran? Oh, without question they would. And it's widely believed that Israel has about 90 nuclear warheads. Now, hopefully they work better than the Iron Dome, because I've got some videos for you here of Iron Dome missiles failing and actually striking back on the ground in Israel. You're going to see some of those videos. But Israel would no doubt nuke Lebanon. Israel would nuke Syria. Israel would nuke Egypt. Israel would nuke Turkey. Israel would nuke Iraq, Iran. Who knows? Yemen, obviously. So there's a lot of countries Israel would nuke, but I don't think they're going to nuke Gaza. They don't want to give anybody a heads up that they might be planning on using nukes, because there are a lot of nukes out there. Iran, we believe, has nukes. We know that Pakistan has nukes. We know that Pakistan is willing to give nukes to Turkey. We know that Turkey has all this military technology and they can deploy nukes. And we know, of course, that Russia has nukes on hypersonic missiles. So, and China obviously has nukes. So there are lots and lots of nukes. If somebody wants to start lighting these things off, it's going to go badly very quickly. All right, I want to show you a video of the Iron Dome missiles malfunctioning and returning to the ground and striking Israel. You know, the Iron Dome missiles are supposed to be Israel's defensive missiles that take out the incoming rockets from Hamas or from Hezbollah. And in the following video, which is quite short, you're going to see three, all at once, three Iron Dome missiles appearing to malfunction and come back and strike the ground in Israel. I'll play it for you twice because it's tricky to see. But check this out. All right, did you see that? I mean, it was easy to see the one big missile going in a circle and coming back and crashing down. But then over the house in the distance, there are two more Iron Dome missiles that look like they're failing also. Let me play it for you one more time in case you missed it. I want you to see this. All right, that was one video. I want you to see another totally different video that is, what, about 18 seconds in duration, I think. Yeah, 19 seconds. This one is a little scary because you think you're watching this one missile shooting away from you. And then there's an incoming missile that's another Iron Dome. Check this one out. This is scary. It would be scary to be standing there when this thing comes at you. Yeah, that's kind of freaky, right? So much for defensive Iron Dome missiles. Are these programmed by the engineers that think 2 + 2 = 5? I don't think these missiles can do math. Let's take another look at that one again, that the incoming one. All right, well, the Iron Dome is, maybe it should be called the Iron Dumb. it's not very smart, is it? All kinds of things can go wrong. Okay, next I want to play for you. Well, let me say this. IDF forces are taking some significant casualties. Their tanks are getting blown up. Their infantry fighting vehicles are getting blown up. Their soldiers are getting shot. Now, granted, Hamas is also getting killed. And I don't know how many fighters Hamas has, maybe 50,000, who knows. They're getting killed big time. But IDF has taken some losses. They may say publicly, oh, we've only lost 19 soldiers. Yeah, give me a break. They've probably lost, 300 or 400 at this point. It won't be long before it's 1,000. And these IDF soldiers, they're afraid to come out of their vehicles. They're afraid to come out of the infantry fighting vehicles. And so they're just cruising around inside the armor, which makes them sitting ducks for RPGs, by the way. I mean, you got to use infantry and armor together. I mean, everybody that's been in the military knows that. You can't just roll around in armor all day. Your visibility is nothing. People are going to sneak up on you, which is exactly what I want to show you here. So the following video is... I want to show you a Hamas fighter running up. I mean, this is really something. Running up to a tank, an Israeli tank, and placing an explosive device on it to knock out the tank's anti-RPG defense system. And then they hit the tank with an RPG. Now, this is wild. And look, no matter what you think about Hamas, these people are not cowards, man. It takes some serious cojones to do this. Check this out. Tell you what, 70% of the U.S. Army is obese or overweight. Like I said before, these Hamas fighters, because they've all been partially starved to death by Israel, these dudes are lean, they're fast, quick on their feet, and they're not carrying around heavy gear. I mean, they are nimble little dudes. I'm not picking sides in this scene. I'm just saying that IDF is losing armor, losing men, and Hamas is putting up a fight because, they're fighting for their very survival here. And they have tactics that are in fact, working. In fact, I want to play one more video for you that shows, I want you to see what this warfare looks like in the urban setting of Gaza on the streets with these Hamas fighters, basically with RPGs and, I don't know, whatever explosive devices they have, but you know, very poorly equipped, actually, and yet they are taking out Israeli armor with shocking effectiveness, and they're filming it all with, I guess, GoPro cameras or some other kind of cameras. But check out this video. It's pretty darn shocking. All right, did you see that last one? It was almost point blank range. I mean, couldn't have been more than like 15 yards away or something from that armored vehicle. And there were no Israeli soldiers on foot around it. I mean, nobody's looking. They're just holed up in their armor driving around, and Hamas just walks right up with an RPG and takes it out. So look, I'm not saying that Hamas is going to defeat the IDF in this battle. They're not. I mean, the IDF has a lot more men, a lot more tanks, plus all the bombs and so on. But the IDF is learning this is not a cakewalk. They're going to take some serious casualties. And Hamas is putting up a lot of resistance here. And these Hamas tactics, you know, asymmetrical warfare, RPGs versus tanks in an urban environment. I mean, it's a classic asymmetrical situation where for very few dollars in terms of what the RPGs cost, Hamas is taking out, you know, in many cases, many millions of dollars worth of armor that has now become like paperweights all over Gaza. All right, now we're going to shift gears to the Albert Pike letter, which I kind of mentioned up front. This is a letter that Albert Pike, who was a big-time Freemason guy, we'll talk about that. He wrote this letter in 1871. He wrote it to Giuseppe Mazzini, who was the Italian revolutionary leader, and he was also the director of the Illuminati. Now, this letter, again, was written on August 15th, 1871, and it's been titled, after the fact, it's been titled The Illuminati Plan for Three World Wars. And there's actually an article about it in the UK Daily Mail, which was written in 2016. So if you want to look this up, go to the Daily Mail. And here's a headline. Letter written by U.S. Confederate officer 150 years ago predicted first two world wars and said the third would be between Islamic leaders and the West. That's the headline. But, and then it asks, but is it just a hoax? Now, that was written in 2016. And this letter, it's been controversial over the years because it predicted a third world war. But let me first read the predictions of the first two world wars. And remember that, you know, World War I was right around, 1917. But this letter was written in 1871. So long before World War I. But Albert Pike, he was a 33-degree Mason. He was an occultist. He was a grandmaster. I'm not sure of what. And a creator of the southern jurisdiction of the Masonic Scottish Rite Order. I don't know. That's a mouthful. How do you get all that together? What do the Scots have to do with this? I don't know. It's a grandmaster of what? Is the KKK involved in this? Who knows? Anyway, according to this letter, quote, the First World War must be brought about in order to permit the Illuminati to overthrow the power of the czars in Russia and of making that country a fortress of atheistic communism. The divergences caused by the agents of the Illuminati between the British and Germanic empires will be used to foment this war. At the end of the war, communism will be built and used in order to destroy the other governments and in order to weaken the religions. Now, understand, by the way, this is all under the umbrella of Lucifer. How does Lucifer rid the world of faith and destroy everybody's faith in all the world religions? Okay, so communism was a key element in this, and World War I was designed to strengthen communism in especially what became the Soviet Union. And he specifically mentions that this will be waged between the British and Germanic empires. Now, I don't know why he doesn't mention the French in this, but, you know, clearly he's got it right on Britain and Germany. And then the Second World War, from the letter, must be fomented by taking advantage of the differences between the fascists and the political Zionists. Again, this was written in 1871. This war must be brought about so that Nazism is destroyed and that the political Zionism be strong enough to institute a sovereign state of Israel in Palestine. Whoa. Which is what happened in 1948 after basically Europe felt really guilty because of the persecution of the Jews. Anyway, the letter goes on. During the Second World War, international communism must become strong enough in order to balance Christendom, which would then be restrained and held in check until the time when we would need it for the final social cataclysm. Got it? So communism and the rise of the Soviet Union was designed to hold Christianity in check. And if you know the work of Yuri Bezmenov, the former Soviet dissident, he laid out the plan that the Soviet Union had for America, which is to infiltrate and then demoralize, right? And cause a loss of cohesion and a cultural revolution inside America, which is partially designed to destroy Christianity. So that's all of that is actually taking place, and it has been for decades. All right, now here's where this gets interesting. The Third World War, from the letter, must be fomented by taking advantage of the differences caused by the agents of the Illuminati between the political Zionists and the leaders of the Islamic world. The war, and by the way, isn't that exactly what's happening right now since October 7th in the Middle East, right? This is the Illuminati moving the pieces on the global chessboard to create war between the political Zionists and the leaders of the Islamic world. The letter continues, the war must be conducted in such a way that Islam, the Muslim Arabic world, and political Zionism, the state of Israel, quote, mutually destroy each other. Got it? This is designed for them to mutually destroy each other. Where Israel nukes the Arab nations and maybe Iran, Persia, and then also Iran nukes Israel and Israel is destroyed as well. The letter continues. Meanwhile, the other nations, once more divided on this issue, again, because this is very polarizing, what's happening in the Middle East, will be constrained to fight to the point of complete physical, moral, spiritual, and economical exhaustion. Does that sound right? It sounds like exactly what's happening. We shall unleash the nihilists and the atheists, he says, and we shall provoke a formidable social cataclysm, which in all its horror will show clearly to the nations the effect of absolute atheism, comma, origin of savagery, and of the most bloody turmoil. Now, listen up what this is all about. Then everywhere the citizens, obliged to defend themselves against the world minority of revolutionaries, will exterminate those destroyers of civilization and the multitude disillusioned with Christianity, whose deistic spirits will from that moment be without compass or direction, anxious for an ideal, but without knowing where to render its adoration, will receive the true light through the universal manifestation of the pure doctrine of Lucifer, comma. And when they say true light, they mean, you know, illumination, illuminati, Lucifer, Lucy means light, right? Comma, brought finally out in the public view. This manifestation will result from the general reactionary movement, which will follow the destruction of Christianity and atheism, both conquered and exterminated at the same time. Wow! Holy wow! Again, written by Albert Pike in 1871. So this Third World War, I mean, even if you read this article in the UK Daily Mail, which was written in 2016, that article was like, well, this third World War prediction it's not coming true. You know, maybe this letter's a hoax, who knows? Now the third thing is coming true. And if you look at what it says, understand that the Third World War is designed to cause Christians to lose faith in Christ, to cause Zionists to lose faith in Judaism, and to cause Islam to lose their faith as well, and to line up everybody behind the, quote, pure doctrine of Lucifer. That's what the Illuminati have been working towards this entire time. This was all a long-term game, a long-term plan to put Lucifer in charge of the world and to get people to adore Lucifer as a reaction against the loss of faith in God or Allah or Christ. I mean, and if you think about it, I know a lot of Christian Zionists right now. You can hear them. You can see their tweets and so on that are saying, you know, doesn't matter what we do, God's going to intervene and save Israel. They believe that because they say it is written, God will save Israel. You might believe that too, listening to this. Maybe that's what you've been taught. How quickly would people lose their faith if Israel is destroyed? People would question everything they've been taught. Wait a second, Israel just got destroyed. Well, that must mean my faith is wrong because my faith told me that Israel would be saved. Where has God gone? See, that will be the question. That's what this letter is pointing out, that people will reject. They will become, quote, disillusioned with Christianity, whose deistic spirits will from that moment be without compass or direction. Right? That's what they're saying, that everybody will be, they won't know where to turn. Who do I listen to? Which religious leaders can I now trust? I mean, the ones that told me Israel would be saved, obviously they lied to me, right? This is the chaos plan by the Illuminati to try to bring people to Lucifer. Now, there's a key here I want to go back to one sentence here that I think is absolutely key. Because remember, the Illuminati, these are the puppet masters that pull the strings behind the globalists. You're not even supposed to talk about the Illuminati. I even had a guy, by the way, a pretty prominent guy in alt media, a couple years ago. I was about to do an interview with him, and he told me, he said, yeah, I'm happy to do an interview with you, but there's one word I cannot say during the interview. I'm like, what's that? He says, Illuminati. I'm like, really? You can't say Illuminati? Why is that? And he said, because they'll kill me. Like, are you serious? He's like, yep, I've been told if I mention Illuminati one more time, they will kill me. So I did the interview with him, and he did not mention Illuminati. We talked about all kinds of stuff, but never mentioned Illuminati. So he was convinced that this is a very powerful group that can, I guess, make credible threats to silence people. And this is a group that likes to work in the shadows, you know, kind of behind the scenes, in the dark, even though they're trying to bring people to the, quote, light of Lucifer, you know, the true light, right? But think about this sentence. The war must be conducted in such a way that Islam and political Zionism mutually destroy each other. How would you do that? How would you mutually destroy Islam and the state of Israel? So Islam is, you know, predominantly in, well, I mean, it's not just the Middle East. It's also Southeast Asia. You know, Indonesia, for example, has, I think, a very high concentration of Muslims. Turkey is like 96% Muslim, right? A lot of Muslims in the Western world, in Western Europe and North America and so on. I mean, Muslims live everywhere around the world. Now, the state of Israel is obviously only in one place, but then again, there are Israeli, you know, advocates and family and so on all over the world. So how big would the world war have to be to destroy all of Islam and all of Zionism? And the answer is, it would have to be a war much bigger than just the Middle East. Maybe it starts in the Middle East. Maybe it starts with, you know, nuking Gaza, and then Iran nukes Tel Aviv, and then Israel nukes half the Arab nations, and then Russia nukes Israel, and then America nukes. You know what I mean? This thing could start small, and it could escalate to a global war to the point where much of the Islam world actually is, you know, destroyed or severely damaged or set back. And also Zionism and Judaism suffers a similar fate. And you could see that if the Illuminati can make this thing big enough and bad enough, well, and maybe they already did that with World War II, but now we have nukes, so things can get far worse. Now, by the way, I forgot to mention in World War I, that's also, 1917 was the year of the Russian Revolution, which had the, that was a revolution that led to the creation of the Soviet Empire, rooted in communism, right? So the prediction of the First World War was right on. The prediction of the Second World War was exactly right on. I mean, that Nazism is destroyed and that political Zionism is strong enough to institute a sovereign state of Israel and Palestine. How could you have known that in 1871, right? And then the Third World War looks like now, just in the last month, we have learned that this is shaping up to almost match it word for word. There's another line here that I already read, but remember it says, meanwhile, other nations, once more divided on this issue, will be constrained to fight to the point of complete physical, moral, spiritual, and economical exhaustion. Now, don't you get the feeling that that's happening in America? Economic exhaustion. All the money printing. Oh, we have to print more money. We have to send more money to Ukraine, and now we have to send money to Israel. Now we have to somehow build more munitions. And moral exhaustion, I think that's an accurate description of what America is suffering from. Spiritual exhaustion. Don't you feel a sense of exhaustion in this fight for humanity, even just since COVID? You know, and I've been fighting for truth, you know, for 20 plus years and getting censored for 7 or 8 years. And you know, the physical exhaustion that's affecting so many people in all of this, especially during COVID and the lockdowns and the masks and the jabs and everything. This sounds very accurate. The complete physical, moral, spiritual, and economical exhaustion. And then it says, we shall unleash the nihilists and the atheists. Now, isn't that what we see with Antifa? Doesn't Antifa remind you, don't they look like kind of like a satanic group, you know? The nihilists and the atheists. Antifa does not believe in God. They are the atheists. And they're also the nihilists. And these contrived movements that are, you know, funded by globalists, they seem to be following exactly the path of this to, quote, provoke a formidable social cataclysm, which will show to the nations the effects of absolute atheism, the origin of savagery, and the most bloody turmoil. So I see that as chaos in the streets, desperate people killing each other, fighting each other for food, you know, for prescription medications, for anything. And all of this rings true to me in terms of what's happening right now in the world. And remember that this is all designed as a great Luciferian deceit to try to convince you that God isn't real. That's the thing, is to try to convince you that God has abandoned you, that God has let you down. Now, think about that. Think about that. This is all very important information. And by the way, I also again want to thank Brad Cummings for sending me the link to a website called godskingdom.org. And if you go to godskingdom.org and you go to the category of prophetic, which is on the left, there is a recent entry there called Sliding Toward World War III and What You Need to Know. And this mentions the letter of Albert Pike, the 1871 letter. And it gives some additional analysis of this. So let me read that for you. It says, both Islam and Judaism are to be destroyed, according to the plan, and Christianity itself, by identifying with the Israelis through Christian Zionism, has also fallen into the war trap. How far will God allow this to go? Now, listen to this, because the writer from godskingdom.org, here's what he writes. In my view, the conflict will continue to escalate until Jerusalem is destroyed, as foretold in Jeremiah 19, chapter 19, verse 10 and 11, and in Isaiah chapter 29, verses 1 through 6. Evangelical and Pentecostal Christianity will then be in a state of shock, and many will become disillusioned, thinking that the promises of God have failed. Right? So that's kind of what I was describing earlier. People will say, well, wait a minute, why didn't God protect Israel? Why didn't God save Israel? How could Jerusalem be destroyed? And probably with a nuclear weapon. So we should be looking at whether Iran will nuke Jerusalem. I mean, that becomes a very real possibility in this, probably in retaliation for Israel nuking somebody else first, maybe Damascus, you know, who knows? But again, as this author writes, Christianity will then be in a state of shock. Many will become disillusioned, thinking that the promises of God have failed. Now, this story also says, as General Wesley Clark has told us, the U.S. government set forth a plan in September 2001 to destabilize the Middle East by overthrowing 7 countries in 5 years. This has been the final strategy of the Pike Plan for World War III. The plan was to cause such disruption in Muslim countries that it would result in a huge influx of immigrants fleeing to Europe and America. The Illuminati planners knew that this would result in conflict. And by the way, that's why our borders are wide open. And that's also why they're pushing Muslim refugees all into Western Europe. This is all on purpose. They knew this would set the stage for conflict. Continuing, quote, and they plan to implement as many false flag incidents as possible to stir up the anger on both sides. Yes, exactly. So this is all part of a plan to deceive Christians and to destroy Jerusalem, to destroy Israel, and to cause the world to lose faith, including the Islam world, to lose faith in Allah. Right. Think about this. This is the destruction of all faith. Now, something else. The rapture. I've been digging into the rapture, and this is going to trigger some people. But I was asking people I know, said, because I don't recall reading the rapture anywhere in any scripture. And it's like, is the rapture even mentioned in the Bible? And it's not. There are a couple of passages in scripture where it talks about, you know, people being like meeting God in the clouds or something that kind of very loosely interpreted. They might mean something related to the rapture. And if you really want to maybe parse all of those, the passages and the history and the autumn feasts and everything and the timing of all this, go to that website, godskingdom.org. They have a two-part article called What is the Rapture? Part 1 and Part 2 by Dr. Stephen E. Jones. It's good reading, but I have to admit, it's way beyond what I could parse. I cannot make sense of it because I don't know. I don't have enough background as a, you know, as a biblical scholar to piece all this together. I do see there's like Thessalonians, 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 17. We who are alive and remain will be caught up to meet the Lord in the air and in the clouds. Like that's, but then you have to understand what are the clouds, and it's not literal. And one of the key statements in this article that I think we have to remember is that, quote, heaven is a spiritual dimension and does not have a physical location as so many think. And a lot of Christians think that the rapture means they're going to be physically lifted up, they're going to rise into the air, fly into the air and into the clouds, and they're going to meet the Lord there in the clouds. I'm like, why not in the outer atmosphere? Why not in the stratosphere? Why not in the ionosphere, the magnetosphere? I mean, can we go into outer space? Can we meet God in orbit? I mean, why does it have to be in the clouds? Because it's not a real physical thing. These are metaphors because it's a spiritual realm. You're going to be lifted out of this meat space, as we sometimes call it, the three-dimensional kinetic meat space. You're going to be lifted out of that into a higher dimension of existence, of communion with God that transcends your physical body. But, you know, it's hard to explain that to a lot of even Christians even. And, you know, pastors want to explain things to people in terms they can understand. And a lot of people don't believe in supernatural things, which is funny because they believe in God. And that's pretty supernatural. You know, it's the ultimate supernatural power who created everything and who is omniscient and omnipotent, right? That's pretty supernatural and can perform miracles, i.e. bend the laws of physics. That's supernatural. But then a lot of Christians don't want to believe in anything supernatural. It's like, oh, we can't talk about, you know, a spiritual world or other dimensions or anything. And so they tell those people, oh, you're just going to be lifted up into the clouds. And then the people, oh, okay, we're going to go up into the clouds. Okay, that's kind of a simple-minded explanation. It's kind of translated into meat space, but it's a metaphor. But when it comes to the rapture, you hear a lot of debates about, you know, pre-trib, mid-trib, and post-trib. And the pre-trib rapture, people believe that they're going to be taken out of here, lifted away to go join God before the tribulation. And this belief system, which is very popular, by the way, this belief system is used by some people, not all, but some people, as a crutch to dismiss responsibility for anything that happens next in the world or any kind of preparedness or anything. And the way the logic goes is, you know, well, I don't care what happens in the Middle East. I'm going to be, you know, raptured out of here before anything bad happens. You hear people say that. Or I don't have to prepare. I don't need preparedness supplies. I don't need ammo. I'm going to be raptured out of here. They think they're going to be lifted into the clouds before anything bad happens. So, but the Bible does not say this. It absolutely does not say this. And it turns out that the entire origin of this rapture theory was created by a guy named John Nelson Darby, who was a 19th century theologian. And before his time, which is about, the 1850s, before that, no Christians talked about the rapture. The concept didn't even exist in Christianity, at least not in a popular way. But because of John Nelson Darby, he began to interpret scripture in a certain way to talk about this rapture of being lifted up to meet God in the clouds and so on. And it caught on. It became what is today a very common understanding among Christians, even though, again, it's not described in scripture. I mean, not in any concrete way at all. I mean, I suppose you could interpret, you know, some passages, but this whole idea of the rapture was created by a man, not by God. Understand? And so imagine when nukes start going off in the Middle East, which is probably where this is headed, and a lot of Christians who have been pre-trib rapture people, a lot of those people are like, hey, wait a second. I'm supposed to be out of here by now. How come I didn't get lifted up? And what's going to happen is a lot of those people are going to start losing faith in God because, well, as society collapses around them, you know, the money supply collapses, the food supply collapses, you know, all the things we talked about. And again, that's part of the Illuminati plan, which is to cause people to lose faith. As the world is falling apart, their God never saved them. Their God never lifted them. They never got raptured. They didn't meet anybody in the clouds. And they find themselves waking up and living in despair with starvation, death, and suffering all around them. And they will say, oh my God, we've been lied to this whole time. There was never a rapture. There was never God. You know, this is the plan. And in that moment, again, Lucifer or his representatives come along and say, hey, we're the world leaders. Join us and we'll bring you, like, we are the ones with rationality and reason and freedom, because Lucifer's always promoted with the idea of freedom. Like, you can be free from the confines of scripture. You can be free, you know, that kind of thing. Seriously, all the Satanists, that they market themselves with freedom, you know, freedom from morality. That's one of their key tenets. Right? You can be free to be, you know, a horrible person. You don't have to confine yourself to rules of ethics and so on. And that's going to be very compelling to a lot of people who will be disillusioned about Christianity at that point. Oh, by the way, forgot to tell you that Albert Pike, he served in the Confederate Army. I mean, gosh, this guy has pretty wild resume. He was elected the sovereign grand commander of the Scottish Rite Southern jurisdiction, and he remained a grand commander of Freemasonry for the rest of his life. He is the only Confederate military officer with an outdoor statue currently in Washington, D.C. Yeah. I mean, think about that. Wow. I mean, he was a lawyer. He passed the bar exam. At one point, he was accepted into Harvard, but he didn't attend Harvard. Just a wild resume. And if this letter is legit, which now it sounds like it, with the Third World War taking shape here, exactly as it was foretold, then this is something we should all take seriously. That it appears that the Illuminati are maneuvering the world into this space for the final attempt at a Luciferian takeover. And that in order to do that, they've got to get Israel and Islam to destroy each other. And nuclear weapons are exactly what can make that happen. And now it all makes sense why Israel is intentionally slaughtering civilians and why they are bombing refugee camps. I said it last week. I said this is designed to provoke a response from the Islamic world. It's designed to do that. And the latest example of that is Israel blowing up the Al-Azhar University in Gaza. They blew up a whole university. I actually have a video of that. Let's play that. مجدنا وعهدنا واجب من الوفا يهزنا يهزنا عزنا عزنا. So why would you bomb a university? You bomb a university. I mean, this is classic Zionism. They bomb a university and then they claim that the people they're bombing are uneducated. They're so stupid, they say. This is such low IQ. And then they bomb all the schools and universities. It's unreal. Israel has also bombed Gaza University and the Islamic University of Gaza and the Al-Aqsa University. Now, why would you bomb universities? It's designed to enrage the world of Islam. That's what this is designed to do. Why would you bomb refugee camps? Why would you bomb hospitals with refugees in the courtyard? You would do this to provoke a reaction. Understand that the casualties of the dead women and children in Gaza, these are all designed. This is probably an Illuminati plot to invoke a response from the Muslim world. And so far, Hezbollah has not yet taken the bait. Hezbollah, its leader, gave a speech on Friday, and he kind of took a middle path. He did not declare war, as we were afraid he might. He did not declare war, but he said that, you know, time is running out, and, you know, this cannot be allowed to continue. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but he didn't declare war yet. Turkey has not yet declared war, although Erdogan appears to be closer to that each day. Iran has, you know, they've had a lot of tough talk, especially from the Iranian defense minister. That dude has a sharp tongue. But so far, nothing in the real world. Nothing. They haven't launched missiles, for example. And you know that the U.S., which, I mean, let's face it, is run by Luciferians. The U.S., the government, they can't wait for Iran to retaliate. I mean, this is the plan. They need Iran to retaliate with ballistic missiles so that they can just go full force and just launch everything against not just Persia, but also, you know, other Islamic areas of the Middle East and who knows where else. But so far, Iran has not launched. And you notice in the Ukraine war, they try to provoke Russia in many different ways to get Russia to launch, you know, nuclear weapons or more aggressive weapons. And they couldn't. They couldn't get Russia to do it. They're trying it now in the Middle East. So the question is, will the Islamic nations have the same discipline that Putin had to not launch nukes? And I think the answer is no. I think that the amount of rage in the Islamic world right now is much, much stronger. And that the numbers of people we're talking about here, like in Turkey, you know, 1 million people show up for a protest. Or even in the UK, 100,000 people show up to protest in London. But imagine the size, the real protest in Iran or Syria or Lebanon. I mean, these protests are going to grow and grow and grow, as there are more atrocities deliberately carried out in Gaza. And what you and I need to understand is the bigger, bigger Illuminati picture behind this. We can't just be focused on, oh, how many people died today, although, you know, it is an atrocity every day. But we can't, you know, lose our big picture and just think, oh, this is about Israel versus Hamas. No, it's not. This is about Lucifer versus creation, man. That's what this is about. And everybody's being maneuvered into this, into a set of circumstances that if the Illuminati get what they want, it will destroy much of Islam and destroy much of Christianity and destroy much of Judaism at the same time, as most of the world lives in despair and mass famine and poverty and fallout, you know? Think about what it's going to do to the food crops once they start launching nukes. You're not going to have food growing for 2 years. And even if you get food, it's going to be, you know, cesium 137 variety of potatoes and milk. And if you wonder about the Deagle numbers, you know, how did the United States, according to Deagle.com, at least it used to say this, how did we end up with a population of less than 100 million people by the end of 2025? Well, World War III, mass starvation, crop failures, nuclear weapons, you know, it's not hard to see how that happens. So just remember this every day as you're inundated with the news about Gaza or Israel or the latest, you know, hospital to be bombed, the latest church to be bombed. Just understand that this is all a grand cosmic manipulation. And there is some real craziness afoot. There was a U.S. lawmaker, I don't have the link, but there was a U.S. lawmaker who proposed a law, it's a Republican, proposed a law to ban Palestinians from becoming citizens. That is, I think it would deport all Palestinian, you know, non-citizen visa holders, as I understand it. You know, because you could have work visas and student visas and, you know, all kinds of things, artist visas. And I guess this GOP guy wants to run around the country and round up Palestinians and deport them all. I mean, and this is the same guy who probably won't fund building the wall. You know, I mean, I've never had an issue with legal immigration. I've always had an issue with illegal immigration and wide open borders and all the, you know, the weapons trafficking and child trafficking and drug trafficking that takes place across that border. But are you really going to turn the United States of America, the continental United States, into a bounty hunter, you know, Palestine hunting police state? Well, what are you going to have, like, bounty hunter rewards? Like, find these Palestinians, you know, bring them to justice. You're going to run around the country hunting Palestinians? Are you kidding me? Do you have any idea how destabilizing that would be to our country? I mean, they would never do that to, I mean, just as a thought experiment, imagine if they wanted to hunt, you know, black people and send them, you know, to Africa or whatever. I mean, it's crazy. It's insane. You can't hunt down. I mean, what if they want to hunt down all the Mexicans and try to kick all the Mexicans out of the country? I mean, there's probably 20 million illegals in this country right now. And I oppose illegal immigration, as you know. But you're going to round up the legal immigrants, but not the illegal immigrants? I mean, what on earth are these people talking about? They want to turn America into Gaza, basically. They want to have a battleground in America where they radicalize every young Palestinian male who might be on a student visa now, but then if the GOP gets their way, then they're going to turn these students into, like, RPG-toting domestic terrorists, which I'm sure the FBI would love that. I'm like, no, let's not radicalize everybody. Let's not have, you know, war on the streets of America. For God's sake, I mean, build the wall, stop the illegal immigration. Yes, get the drug dealers out of here. Get the child traffickers. I mean, use the rule of law. But you can't go hunting down people that already have valid, you know, green cards or student visas or F1 visas or work visas or whatever. You can't hunt those people down. But that's what's being proposed. Again, these are signs of insanity. None of us would be safe. None of us would be safe. They would have, like, checkpoints on all the roads. Are you Palestinian? You look Palestinian. Prove that you're not Palestinian. Are you Palestinian? You know, can you imagine? Show me your papers, right? Show me you're not Palestinian. Prove it. How do you prove you're not Palestinian? It's like, you wave an American flag. Praise Jesus. I mean, what do? You run around. How do you prove you're not Palestinian? I don't know. But this is insane. But Israel is clearly trying to provoke. In fact, the IDF just bombed the car of a journalist in Lebanon and killed his entire family. A journalist. Yeah, that's all over Al Jazeera and a bunch of other sites if you want to check that out. There's also, by the way, if you want to follow a channel on Twitter, there's one called My Lord Bebo, B-E-B-O, that's pretty good. There's also, yeah, My Lord Bebo. There's also one called J.D. Sharp that's pretty good as well. There's a ton of stuff, obviously, on Twitter. But the IDF, what they're doing doesn't make sense until you understand this is a plan to provoke. If they get the provocation, they can get Islam all involved in the war, and then the Illuminati are really happy. Yay, we got Christians and, you know, Muslims to kill each other, and maybe they can destroy all of it. So be careful. If you're out there calling for more bombing and calling for more escalation, like, go in and kill them all, just kill them all, you know, you are following the plan of the Illuminati. If you call for peace, you are disrupting the plan of the Illuminati. Understand? And that's why I keep calling for peace. It's not about Israel versus Hamas. This is about Satan versus God. I mean, really, that's what this is. If you're on the side of war, you're on the side of Lucifer. If you're on the side of peace, you're on the side of God. It really is that simple. I mean, I know people can make it all complicated. Oh, here's like 50 scriptural verses. Try to sort this out. Ah, you know what? It's actually simpler than that. It's like, stop murdering people, protect life. And that's consistent with the teachings of Christ, by the way. I mean, I don't need scripture to tell me that. I don't need scripture to tell me all human beings are created as children of God, and God hates it when people murder each other. I mean, simple. I don't even have to quote verse. That's what it is. But just remember, all the influencers that you see out there calling for war, they're actually doing the bidding of the Illuminati. Very simple. And that's one silver lining in all of this. This is a moment of great clarity. This is kind of sorting out those who are with evil versus those who are not, those who reject it. So given the duration of today's episode here, I'm actually not going to put an interview on it. I have quite a few, so we'll start combining interviews tomorrow. But a couple things I want to remind you of: our Black Friday sale event, which is our biggest event of the year at the Health Ranger store, begins this Thursday. Yeah, I know, it's coming right up. This Thursday, the 9th, is, I think it begins at noon central, but I'm not exactly sure. And we have huge sales, some of the biggest specials of the year, and we're giving away the Pine Needle Nasal Spray, which is not for sale. And that's the one that, because we only have limited quantities. I mean, I personally harvested the loblolly pine needles that are very high in shikimic acid. So I oversaw the harvesting, the washing, the drying, the grinding, and then the ultrasonic extraction of the shikimic acid. And it's a very unique nasal spray that nobody else has this in the world. And you can't even buy it. You can only get it by shopping with us at healthrangerstore.com beginning this Thursday. And we have a lot of new products, including the heavy cream powder, all certified organic, lab tested. We've got the white cheddar cheese powder. We also have a new trail mix that's super delicious. I've been chowing down on that. I actually still have some of a bag left right here. It's awesome. Loving it. We have a lot of new products, a lot of solutions. Biggest sale of the year, the best savings of the year. So get ready to shop beginning this Thursday at healthrangerstore.com. I will post today, though, by the way, my interview with James Martinez from last week. He's a survivor of the Acapulco storm. And man, does he have a story to tell, not just about Acapulco and storms, but about the globalist control of cities, geoengineering, weather control, weaponization. I'm going to post that separately. So look for that interview today on my channel on Brighteon.com. And then also don't forget, tomorrow I'm hosting Alex Jones beginning at noon central. I've got 2 hours of his show, and I am currently planning to interview Jeffrey Prather and then Scott Ritter. Again, those plans are subject to change. It kind of depends on Alex and what's going on in his life. And you know, world events. I mean, anything can interrupt. Who knows? But that's the current plan, always subject to change. In any case, if I don't get a chance to interview Scott Ritter soon on the Alex Jones Show, I will be interviewing him myself on my show. So we will get a chance to talk to Scott Ritter again here very soon. All right, that's the show for today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for thinking about all of this. Thank you for understanding the big, big picture in all of this. It's so much bigger than what most people think. And it's easy to get caught up in the details of, you know, which hospital got bombed today and what are the casualties on either side. It's a much bigger picture of what's going on. So don't lose sight of that bigger picture. Thank you for listening. Be safe, everybody. God bless you all. I'll be back with you tomorrow with another episode and another interview. Until then, be safe and get prepared. Take care. Thank you for supporting us here at Brighteon.com. And one way you can also help support us is by shopping at HealthRangerStore.com. And we've got some really exciting new products to share with you here today. I've got samples on my desk, and there's three things to mention here. The one on the left, it's called Hydrate Elementals. It's a combination of coconut water powder, certified organic, and Aquamen, which is a mineral supplement that has some very special, unique properties. This is about mineral replenishment and hydration. You can learn more about it at our website, healthrangerstore.com. It's very popular, especially with people who do any kind of fitness or workouts. We've also got here on the right side a new trail mix product. This has coconut chips and nuts and almonds and walnuts plus raisins. It's a very delicious trail mix, and it's not just a bunch of junk and a bunch of crumbs and byproducts of nut processing. I mean, this is a high-end trail mix, all certified organic, all lab tested, including for glyphosate and heavy metals and more. Check it out at healthrangerstore.com. You're really going to enjoy this. And then finally, in the middle there, we have something brand new that I'm super excited about. It's a pine needle nasal spray. And that's in the green little small vials there with the nasal spray aerosolized tip on the top. I personally harvested the pine needles for this in Texas. They're loblolly pine trees because the pine needles are extremely high in shikimic acid. And then I oversaw the extraction of the shikimic acid and then the mixing of that into this formula. You can read the ingredients on our website. But this product is not being sold. It's only available for free as a bonus giveaway during our Black Friday sale event that's coming up. And watch for that. Join our email list. You'll get the announcements. You get, you know, all the links to participate in that. The only way that you can get that nasal spray with the shikimic acid using pine needles that I personally harvested in Texas is through the Black Friday event at healthrangerstore.com. And during that event, by the way, it's our biggest sale of the year. We're going to have the most products on discount, all kinds of amazing discounts, including on third-party products that are drop-shipped and so on. It's wait till you see the catalog and the landing page for that. It's going to be quite impressive. But you definitely want to take advantage of that and get some of this pine needle nasal spray and look up shikimic acid too, because that's the molecule that is used to make Tamiflu, by the way. Very interesting fact. Also, one more thing. On our website, healthrangerstore.com, we now have available certified organic heavy cream powder. We've got it in pouches and number 10 cans. And this heavy cream powder is, of course, you know, laboratory verified. It's tested for, you know, heavy metals and glyphosate and microbiology as well. And there's no junk in here. It's literally powdered heavy cream. It's not just maltodextrin and you know, a bunch of garbage with cream flavor. None of that stuff. This is the real deal. That's why it's not cheap, by the way. But if you want to add to your food storage pantry heavy cream, this goes a long way. And we also have, by the way, we have now organic white cheddar cheese powder, also in number 10 cans and pouches as well. So you can make your own macaroni and cheese pretty easily by combining this cheese powder with the organic cream powder and some salt and pepper and some onion powder and get yourself some, you know, organic macaroni. And it's all done. You have a really nice meal. So take advantage of this at healthrangerstore.com and that will also help support this platform. We thank you for your support, and I'm committed to bringing you more interviews, more content, more analysis each and every day that helps you understand what's happening in our world, helps you navigate it, and also, importantly, helps you survive it. Thank you for supporting us here at Brighteon.com and HealthRangerStore.com. Take care.